Shalom Aleichem. Thank you to all of you, our Talmidim, who have joined us this evening, to those of you who joined us earlier today for the Siddurim and Shirim that we heard from our Rebbein. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank my two colleagues, Rav Gedalia Frankel and Manny Leibowitz, for putting in such a great effort to make today such a successful day. We are sure and hopeful that today was a little bit of inspiration to help all of you, our Talmidim, who are certainly struggling in this new environment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has brought on Klal Yisrael and the entire world. As you are struggling and dealing with those new realities, so are we here at Yeshiva, trying and Baruch Hashem in some ways successfully providing our current Talmidim, both in the Kol Yeshiva and in the Mechina, with opportunities to continue steiging and continuing their Zman. And it's through no small effort in Mesiras Nefesh of our Rabbeim and our Rashi Chabura and our IT department, the Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva continues to thrive, the Zman continues to go, albeit without Bocharim and Yungalait on campus. Equally as inspiring, if not more so, our Talmidim have been unbelievable in shtalling tzu to the Zman and really being Meiser Nefesh and holding and learning in the Shiurim in an unbelievable and unusual way. And we are Mespal HaKadosh Baruch Hu that through their Mesiris Nefesh to continue learning Torah and the Mesiris Nefesh of Rabbeim, we should be Zeicha in the not-too-distant future to open the Yeshiva and that the Kaisle-based Medrash of Yeshivas Ner Yisrael should reverberate with the Kail HaTorah. And we equally give you all a bracha that through your Mesiris Nefesh and your dedication to your Mishpachas, to learning, to making the best of this Matziv, we should all be zeicha to the Gula Asida. And without further ado, I'd like to turn the floor over to our Rav Tzvi Berkowitz and our Shaga Neuberger.
Okay, good night, everyone. Good evening, good night. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I'd also like to thank the very robust question submissions that came in. We got a lot of questions submitted. I appreciate everyone's efforts in submitting those questions. I had to narrow things down just for the in respect to our time limitations. And what I've done is taken the ones that are the most often asked and also the ones that are most relevant to the current situation that we all find ourselves in. So the way we're going to do this is I'm going to be starting with a question and then having Rav Neuberger answer and then Rav Berkowitz answer. If during this, the answers, you have some follow-ups that are very succinct that you'd like to message me, you're welcome to do so. I'll see if I have the opportunity and ability to incorporate some of the follow-ups. I'll try my best to do that. So without further ado, let me start with the first of the four sets of questions here. Spending extended periods of time with family members, often in close quarters, has raised many challenges. Here's a sample of some of the questions that many people are struggling with.
Annie?
Yes. I take the medical establishment's recommendations about COVID very seriously. My spouse thinks that much of this is unnecessary or an overreaction. How should we deal with these disagreements? What should we tell our children? Between my learning, my son's learning, my daughter's learning, what should take precedence? What takes precedence? Learning and Shmiras HaMitzvahs on the one hand, or keeping everyone sane and in a good mood on the other hand? And finally, I daven better myself. My children daven better when they join me.
Hello, this is Mami.
What should I do? Okay.
Hello.
Rav Neuberger, if you'd like to take the first stab at answering how we can balance all these types of issues that arise when everyone's cooped up for extended periods of time in close quarters?
Well, and the first question that you mentioned was about how if there's a family where one spouse takes on the medical establishment to some degree and the other spouse feels that it's extreme. So I'm trying to understand, is this a COVID question or is this a Shalom Bayis question? In terms of COVID, you know, that's, you know, the doctors themselves have all kinds of fakes, et cetera. But the question itself, when you have two different days about things, right, is no different than any other difference that a couple will have, right? And in a case like this, where it's a question of, you know, what do you follow, right? If a person has a das Torah, their rav or their rabbein for yeshiva, and following the aseh l'cha rav, so then, you know, when a couple comes to an impasse, it can be on a shalom bayis thing, it can be on where to send the kid with yeshiva, it can be on all kinds of cases. When the couple can't work it out, that's where you go to someone that both sides trust, hopefully starting with Das Torah, to figure out what to do. So to me, it seems that, you know, it's not a question of, the doctors themselves don't know a lot about the COVID at the same time. Obviously, Hamir Sekanta Misura, and therefore it's understandable why people want to be machmir. When there are conflicting dais among rabbanim and conflicting dais among doctors, exactly what to do, it becomes a great turmoil for people to figure out. And that's part of, I guess, what the Eberster had in mind over here for us to see, is that even in medical science and Tuf Shin Pei, with all its advancements, there's only one Beir Refuah, and it's only the Rabban Shel Olam. And everything else is a mystery. That's certainly something that we all have to realize, and that goes without saying. In terms of, you know, a person's learning for himself and for his child and for his son and daughter, you know, every situation is different, but the parent has the achrayus for the children. And for so many children, this is such a struggle that involves the parents' involvement in it in order to help them do it for the various means that they try to do it. Obviously, that doesn't pater the parent from his chiyuv of Talmud Torah, but his kedima to help out his children in such a case is obvious, because he's the parent, that's the child, and the child needs that extra siyuva because it's such an unnatural way to learn. Sweet, do you want to continue on this, please?
I would echo what Rav Shraga says, that disagreements between husband and wife and how to approach is certainly not limited to this particular question. You can have hundreds and hundreds of situations where a husband and a wife have a different perspective on any particular issue. And they have to deal with this one the way they deal with that issue. Both have to try to work together. Very often it's important to get hadracha, because when you're dealing with something that can become so emotionally charged, when people feel there's an element of sakana in both sides, where people can feel it's dangerous to do this, people can feel that it's dangerous for mental, emotional health the other way. Certainly something as chomer as this probably needs some help for the two sides to be able to deal with it together. But it's true, there is no simple answer as go like this one or go like that one. But the reality is that their ability in general to work together is an important factor in their being able to deal with this type of, we'll call it, disagreement. As far as the achrayas to family, I agree. I would just like to add, parents have to understand their children look to them, bichlal, in life for support. They are the emotional support. They are the ones who children depend on, who they lean on. And the role of parents is always to be there to give the children what they need, especially when the child feels that he's in a helpless situation or an overwhelming situation. So it's the achrayus of the parents bichlal to have the strength themselves, as much as they're also under enormous pressure and stress, to realize that since they are the backbone of the family and the strength of their commitment to each other and the family and their resolve to keep the family together and functioning and happy as much as possible is vital for the family to thrive, for the children to be able to deal with such a difficult situation. So the details is very hard to give hadracha. You can't give amounts of time. You can't say exactly how to divide it up. It's something obviously that requires both a shikul. Obviously, there are many halachic shaylos where a person has to ask. You know, you can deal with it from a sugya perspective of oisik v'mitzvah potem in a mitzvah, mitzvah iveris, not mitzvah iveris. There are many ways of approaching it from a lamdasha perspective. But in besides the lamdasha perspective, there's always a judgment of the tzairich, which lav davka, the blat gemara, the shulchan aruch, can help you define. The tzairich of a spouse or the tzairich of a child is very, very subjective. Only the parents know how acute and how intense the tzairich is, and therefore they need the ability to make a judgment as to how to balance everything. But I feel that it's important for them to realize it's not a question that one might simply say, well, I have my needs and my child has his needs. Whose needs come first? My child's needs are my needs because I'm the parent. So again, there's sugyas of who liftais, who benoi liftais, where you can delve into the lumdis of how does one deal with his mitzvahs, his children's mitzvahs. I'm leaving that aside. Lamaisa, a parent, especially with ketanim, but even with adult children, a parent has to realize the children are dependents not only on your tax return, but they are lemaisa very dependent on the emotional stability that the parents provide for them.
So that is something. I would like to add that just like Rabsi talked about the parents' role, I think that the role of the husbands is greater than the role of the wives. Chazal tell us that a person should be mechabed ishta yubonav yoyser mimashi yeshloi mipnei shehein tluyin boch. So the Chazal tell us that on certain levels, the wife's betochen is in the husband as well. So in the hierarchy, of course, parents have an achrayus. And I believe that the husbands, being the husband in the relationship, has an even greater achrayus to give positivity into the house and to be helpful to the wife, and to give her the encouragement that she needs too, in order to be able to face all the difficulties with the children that people have, Meruba Bobonim and Mysterious Nefesh of families, now is just Nifla Admaoid. Even highly functioning families are having a difficulty because of the length of this pandemic, Hashem Yirachem, and it's mechayev on parents, as she said, and I think it's a special mechayev to us, the men, as the baal in the relationship, to take an even greater achrayus.
Okay.
I guess one more point. The thing, when the question about davening with the kid, yeah. I think that it's pashut ad ma'oid that if a kid wants to daven with the father, he has to daven with the father. And if the father's tefillah is not as good, that's okay. Let him say tilim when the kid's asleep with great dveikus, and they can have his avodah that way. But avada on avada, if the kid wants to daven with the father, then it's hard for me to hear any other side.
And just on the question of the tension that sometimes exists between trying to keep a higher Rama or a high Rama of Shmiras HaMitzvahs and learning, etc., and balancing that out with trying to keep the mood at a manageable level. Is there any general guideline that can be offered to how to navigate those two priorities that sometimes seem to be conflicting with each other?
I would say in response to that, that the answer is an answer that might sound simple, but probably for most people, they will need to be able to consult with their Rav to get Hadracha. We find throughout Shulchan Aruch halachas that touch on Shas Hadchak. You can start from the beginning of Shulchan Aruch all the way through, and you will find the din, and then what's the din b'Shas Hadchak. Shas Hadchak, of course, is hard to define very clearly, but Shas Hadchak clearly means extenuating circumstances. Not everybody is somebody who can know the answer to every question, but every person should have a Rav to be able to ask what he finds especially challenging, whether it has to do with Zmani Atfila, where he davens, whether it has to do with other mitzvahs. A person should consult with his Rav. A competent Rav should be able to give him a hadracha. Obviously, the shaila that's being presented has to be presented in a very clear fashion, being able to explain to the Rav whether it is serious or isn't serious. Within the Shas Hadchak, of course, there are many variables. There's the husband, there's the wife, there's the children, there's the Tzairach HaParnasa. There are many factors that create the Shas Hadchak. The Rav's role is not necessarily, even though a Rav could be helpful in sorting out priorities, but I think a chelik of what a Rav could be helpful is giving the person the ability to have a perspective of where do I put my obligations, what we'll call in the Bein Adam L'Makim, when they are in conflict. So if my Rav explains to me that certain things b'Shas Hadchak are acceptable, or whether certain things will have a priority over another mitzvah, for that a person has to seek guidance from a Rav, because not all of us are capable of knowing the answer for every single shaila. But many of these are things that are, we'll call them le'ikuva, and many are things which are lechatchila. Many are things where they are really chumras, but we're just used to doing them all the time. So we don't know the difference between one and the other. So a person who may know more could figure it out himself, but most people, I think, need to get hadracha. It's probably important, and those who will listen to the shiurim of their rabbanim or guidelines that may be given by rabbanim may get a certain sense, even though it's general, as to where to put things in perspective, what are lechatchilas, what are bidyevet, just to give a person a frame of reference of how do I deal with my obligations, especially when I have pressures to deal with other things that I have to take care of.
I'd just like to add to what she said is that people have either grandparents or great-grandparents, or certainly know of people that went through the war, 70, 80 years ago, and the nisyanis that these people had, which are PLF, alafim of the nisyanis that we have now, and just like in the war, there were people that shined and became more special as a result of these enormous, enormous nisyanis. There's people that fell also, and this is something that no matter what mistakes we may have made as parents during this last several months, anything that we can do to uplift ourselves and to give chizuk and idut to our spouses and children and try to live on a hechera oifen with all the pressures that there are is a defining factor in our lives, because hopefully the tsar should pass soon, but it's you know, the fact that this is, you know, some people have said that since the Mabul, there hasn't been something that's been so widespread, and it's something that's so cataclysmic, so mishunidic, the Ruftzach HaRois Fin Unz, that we have to try to rise to the occasion, and many, many people have, and even at times that we fall, if we can rise now to the occasion, it's something which is a legacy to our mishpachas, and it should be looked at as a tremendous, tremendous nesoyin, and we need gevaldik asata d'shmaya and rutzen to do the right thing. And if there's the rutzen there, right, so then the Hashem manoloshen, then the Eberster gives a kayach. The Gain says that if a person is batuach and the Eberster enough, then and he has to go speak to a melech or a sar, Hashem manoloshen, to make sure the right words come out. The same thing is true to our spouses and children. If we were mevakish in the Eberster, vildesata d'shmaya, to talk to my kids right, to talk to my spouse right, with all the pressures that a person has, the Eberster can give that tata d'shmaya, and the way we say something can make such a gevaldig nafkamina in such rare times.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to move on to the second question here. In times of crisis, B'nai Torah turn to their Rebbeim, Rabbanim, and G'dayla Torah for guidance. In our digital age, where information travels fast, we often hear the positions of various G'daylim here and in Eretz Yisrael. Often these views contradict each other and are different from what we are hearing from our local Rabbanim or Rebbeim from Yeshiva. Who should one follow in a scenario like this? Shraggy, if you would, Neuberger, if you'd like to take a first stab.
Well, certainly the Asel Harav comes into play in communities like in Baltimore and other communities too, where Rabbanim get together and they offer and they say a psak of Hanhog of what to be done, and they are the Marta Asras of the community that's a Machayev for people to listen to their Marta Asra. And the fact that it can be in another community, a different Marta Asra says something else. But over here, the Sata D'Shmaya is, if you follow the Manhigim in the Mokum that you're at, and there are Manhigim, or Tamil Chacham, G'dayli Torah, and people that lead a community, so you have a Sata D'Shmaya by following them. There can be a Manhig in another city that hold something different, Tatnish, right? There are machlokes in between Gerasa Gedolim about if something was a Simon Trefer or not, and with Gezok that if you live in the city where the Rav held was a Simon Trefer, I think it was Rav Chaim Volozhiner, so then the person would die within 12 months. And if you live in the city where it wasn't a Simon Trefer, then the person would live. And the same thing is here also. When there's Marta Asra, the person's machlokes to go with it. When a person has his own Rabbeim, and he's not going against the Marta Asra and his personal anhaga, but there's always an inyan of a takana seir also, which has to be gecheshbon, and that's all part of Ratzon HaTorah. So just like there's different dais in all halachas, can be different dais in these things too, and you have to follow the Meiri Derech that the person's mechuyev to follow.
I feel that we are accustomed to dealing with machlokes, starting from Tanoim, Amoraim, Rishonim, Achrayim. And the reason we have no difficulty dealing with machlokes is because we work with a premise that each one is saying his understanding of the Torah. Each one is presenting the way he sees it with complete honesty and no negias and no ulterior motive. The Ramban writes in his Akdama to Mechames Hashem that when you have a machlokes or rishonim and they bring rayas to each other's sheet, to each one's shita, the Ramban says they're aware of the rayas keneged them, but ultimately their disagreement is one of a judgment. It's one of shikul hadas. They're making a judgment between what each one feels, pushes one way, pushes the other way. They're making a judgment what they think is the right shot, and ultimately it's that judgment which is the nekuda of their machlekes. when you deal with Talmidei Chachamim, we have the trust that they're honest. They are people who are thinking about what does the Torah want. They are thinking about the Tzairich HaRabim, and that's what motivates them. That is what makes it possible for people to have trust and confidence that the people who they turn to for Hadracha are people who are interested only in one thing, which is the Ratzon Hashem, which is what is the Hadracha to be given to the Kehilos, to the Yechidim, Al Pi the Torah. We find a very interesting thing. Reb Chaim Meiser, who was the Gadol Hador, was asked a shaila from a different city, and he wrote that I am not there in the city that's asking me the shaila. If I'm not there, it's very hard to respond. He wasn't being asked a shaila of what's the halacha, which is universal. He was being asked as to what should be done in that particular city, and he wrote, to write an answer from a different location, he didn't feel that he, the Gadol Hador, was equipped to respond. He said it's a question that has to be asked locally. When you're dealing with something as complex as not something that you're going to find the answer in Shulchan Aruch, but it's so complex because you're dealing with the balance of halacha, the balance of scientific information, which is not clear, the balance of the clientele, the nature of the people, the facts on the ground. Such a complex shikul is very difficult to make if you're not there. To me, it seems that as much as we live in a day and age where we can have, we could consider it a mila, the advantage of knowing what's going on in kamat every inch of this earth, we can be aware of anything that's said, anything that's talked about. We could become instantly aware of it, which has its benefits. But at the same time, people have to understand and recognize what one Rav says in one location is not necessarily what that Rav himself would say in a different location. Every Rav is responding to what he's being asked. Every Rav is responding to how he's being asked. Every Rav is dealing with whatever set of facts he's aware of. And he's not trying to say a response for those who are eavesdropping. He's speaking to those who he's speaking to, that he knows he's speaking to. So for people to go canvassing and finding psukim and statements and things taken out of context, I think helps no one. Everybody wants to do what's right. Everybody has the derech klal, people to turn to for hadracha. A person has to understand, the same way I would never call up a doctor looking through the yellow pages and ask him a question about my health if he did not know my medical history, I would not want to ask a shaila like this, which is not a one-size-fits-all type of a shaila, but to ask a shaila that I should understand is very, very subjective. It has to do with myself. It has to do with my family. It has to do with my kehila. It has to do with what's going on in my particular city, in my particular state. There are so many halakim, which are factors. Sometimes the shaila doesn't even realize himself what are the important things to present to the Rav that I'm asking. So to make even a phone call, and Kol Shekein, where it's not even a phone call, it's usually something which is hearsay, to take that and apply it to myself, I think is really not a wise thing. I think a person would be doing himself a disservice by shopping, thinking that he's shopping for answers to his questions. Those answers are not going to help him. They'll just leave him more confused. He'll go to his Rabbanim and he'll ask them, and he'll be Mekabel Hadracha. The Ribbono Shel Olam sends to the Rabbanim what their Kehila needs. The Hafla writes in a place that a Rebbe gets the Chachma that his Talmidim need. Rabbanim are given the Chachma, they're given the understanding that their Kehila needs. They're the Shluchim of the Kehila, and they're the Shlucha de Shmaya. So they're getting the answers we need to get. So for me to be saying to myself, let me go shopping elsewhere, I'll get different answers, I'm not really helping myself. I think that a person is doing a disservice to himself. It causes confusion. It sometimes causes fights which have no merit and no basis for them. You can sometimes even have disparaging remarks, which is a bizayon bichlau and bifrat. And I think it's an etz taiva for people to appreciate and recognize the chachma that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Talmidei Chachamim. A person should appreciate the mesiris that Talmidei Chachamim have for their kehila. Their rabbanim bizmanenu don't sleep. They don't sleep. They don't rest. They're constantly misyayitz with each other. The Chazal tell us when there's a shaila of treifus, the Amoraim used to gather all the Talmidei Chachamim before they would be matir. They're always misyayitz with each other. They hear each other out. They could disagree. They could have arguments. That doesn't take away from the erlichait. Doesn't take away from the bakoshos ha'emes. And I, the consumer, benefit from the fact that they are trying to be madrich the kehila.
So I just want to follow up with a question that's being asked in different permutations. I'm going to try to reformulate it. And I think in general, people pick a Moira Hora or a Merit Derech who they're comfortable with. And once they've done that, they're able to trust their judgment in the way that the two Rebbeim here have described. In the particular case at hand, it seems that part of the judgment about what to do, both on a halacha level and in terms of just on haggas of balancing things out, part of the judgment has to do with how a person understands or relies upon call it medicine or the opinions of experts, and a person who would otherwise be comfortable with their Rav or otherwise be comfortable with their Rebbe or even with the deyas that certain gedolim are saying, if that person trusts that gedolim was in fact saying it. But in this particular case, he feels uncomfortable asking the question because of the way that the Rav or Rebbe or et cetera is being misyachis in general to the part of the question that has to do with weighing the opinions of the doctors or of having a tfisa over the science. In a case like that, or like case like this, does it now give more license for the shoyel to not, you know, pick and choose, but to try to find someone who he feels is more in line with the way he would approach the different parts of the question? Of course, if he's asking the question, he's relying on somebody else's judgment. He wants to hear what this Meir Derech is going to be advising, but he wants to make sure that that person has the information and the right information. Is there a flexibility, and does it even make sense at that point to kind of make an exception, we'll call it, and go and find somebody that he's more comfortable with?
What makes him a bigger mumcha than the Das Torah to find out who's getting accurate information?
So I guess that
means that he's really not going to a Rav for a Psach. Because the Rav, the Rabbanim are consulting with doctors, as you see in Halacha and the Gemara, and they do consult with doctors, and they should consult with doctors, but a Rav is not a doctor, and a doctor is not a Rav. The doctors have to say how they see it, and if the Rav holds that based on how the doctor sees it, that's a machria, it'll be machria, and if the Rav has a reason why what the doctor's saying is not a machria, that's part of what the job of the Rav is to do. But because the person has a particular bend, and therefore he wants to now choose to go to a different rav than he would normally go to for a shaila chamura, that's fishing. That's fishing, and that's not, I don't think that's the proper thing. The people he would go to for Shver Shilas is the person he should go to for this and follow it, and he doesn't understand it, he doesn't understand it. Okay? That's okay. It doesn't mean that he has to understand it, but he has to know that he's going to somebody bigger than him who has achrayus and who has Sata Dishmaya, because he's somebody who the Eberster gives Sata Dishmaya, and the Eberster is Meshabed many times to what an Emes Abezin will say. To tell you a quick story that I just recently read from Rav Gussman, there was a lady who, for 2 years after the war, she didn't send Shabbos, like she was Machal Shabbos because of the war, and then she did tshuva, and someone came to her and told her that for every week that she missed, she has to light a candle. She went to Rav Gussman to ask, should she light over 100 candles every Shabbos? And Rav Gussman said, give a penny for each Shabbos you missed every Erev Shabbos and light the regular candles. And Talmidim asked him afterwards, but it says in Shulchan Aruch that you have to light for every Shabbos you miss. He says she would have such tzar and such bezoyin that if Bezin down here will paskin that she shouldn't light more than two candles, then Shemaim, they'll accept that too. So when Gedolei Torah paskin shilas, they have a sata d'shmaya, as the priest said, and if you follow them, it'll be okay, even if it's the hepech of another Gedolei Torah.
I feel that when people have a question that revolves around some scientific facts or medical facts, and if they feel that the Rav that they're asking either doesn't grasp it because he doesn't have the ability to understand the details, even though I feel that Bederach Klal, if they were to ask a Rav and it would be clear that he doesn't grasp it, I think that that Rav would either ask to speak to a doctor to be masbert to him, or he would send to somebody else. But if it's clear that he doesn't really have the ability to understand it, then I don't see a problem of speaking to another Rav who has a better understanding who could help them. But Bederach Klal, I think Rabbanim know their limitations. There can be a difference between I go to the Rav, I tell him what the doctors say, or he even hears it directly from the doctors, but I feel that his perspective is different than mine. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's less understanding than I am. He just may see things differently from his perspective as a chacham. That's a different question. But if the shoyel feels the rav doesn't have either access to a doctor, doesn't have the ability to understand it, then it's reasonable to speak to another rav who could help him sort it out. But as I said, very often the Rabbanim could be hearing the same things, but their way of being shoykel may be different than the shoyel. But ultimately, a person has to have trust in his Rav. I think if there's a yachas with the Rav that's been developed over years, and there's a trust in the Rav's judgment, then I think Bederach Klal, they would have the trust that the Rav is taking things seriously, even though he may be machria differently than they think. But there can be cases where a person just doesn't have that comfort zone. But again, he's not shopping for somebody who's going to say like himself. He just needs somebody who he feels will be able to help him deal with whatever he's confused about.
Okay, let's move on to the next question, the next set of questions, which have to do with shidduchim. The regular way of conducting shidduchim has been put into disarray. What are some general guidelines that can be followed to navigate the circumstances? Here's a sample of questions that are often asked. Should people be looking into new suggestions and starting new parashiyos? Should older singles approach the question differently? Many are reluctant to take a long break. What venues or mediums are appropriate? Is meeting virtually an effective method? Is meeting wearing masks realistic?
Well, the answer to some of the questions during Parshas Bahar B'chukosai may have a different answer than if the question was asked in Parshas Tzav, because as this has gotten longer and more drawn out, the mechayev of trying to make differences, because Siddukim do have to happen, of course, are there. So 2 months ago, we dealt with the issues differently than we're going to deal with it today. And it could be in 2 weeks from now, we'll deal with it differently. Not that Chas V'Sholem, we're going to tell people now, you put yourself in Sakana, Chas V'Sholem. But at the same time, if 6 or 7 weeks ago, we were telling people not to date, because we were hoping that they could date in a normal oifen, and just wait it out. Now if it's 2 months later, especially if they're older singles, but even regular cases where they're not, after several months, you're not going to tell somebody, okay, you'll date in a year and a half after they come up with a vaccine. That's not a mahalach. Now, in terms of having Skype dates or dates where they're 6 and 8 feet apart, meeting in a park when they're bringing their own chairs, all those things are dependent. Each and every situation is different. Some people can do Skype dates as a haschola and it works well, and some people can't do Skype and have a hard time, right? That is not one-size-fits-all answer to that also. Some people won't say they can't start a date with a Skype, and some say they can. Some people are not comfortable traveling to a community where they don't want people coming from out of town, and they're correct not to violate what the hanhaga is in a certain place. I have cases of people where, you know, they went to a neutral place and stayed many feet apart and dated that way, and that can work also. But exactly how much give there has to be depends on the matzav, on the age of the respective people, on how long this pandemic goes, all within the confines of, but that's not matter somebody to do something which is chas v'shalom sakonadik. But at the same time, how far do you go depends on the matzav, and we can't answer every shidduch case on this situation, but if, you know, if they have a rub that is a balanced person who understands, you know, what the situation is. The answer for an 18-year-old is not the same answer as if somebody's 36 years old, right? Every situation is different, and it has to be dealt with on an individual basis within the guidelines of the community, with the understanding that you can't wait until they're, at this point, I think, you can't wait until there is a full Eitzah, because it's not Shayach, so therefore it has to be done with great Zahirus.
The Chelek of the Shaila, which I think is really belongs in the arena of Shatchanim, I can't respond to in terms of what works and what doesn't work and what should be done. That I can't answer. Whether or not people should be Isaac and Shidduchim, I think they definitely should be Isaac and Shidduchim. I think that another piece which may be creating some anxiety with people is that people wonder, perhaps knowing how to start is half the question or even a third of the question. But I think what concerns people and causes more confusion is if the Shidduch develops, how will they ever get past this virtual dating or distance dating? How will they have the, we'll call it the typical events of the Shidduch, the L'chaim, eventually getting married, Sheva Brachas? I think some people are overwhelmed with the thought, especially young people, of being quote-unquote cheated and robbed of what they envisioned would happen at their chasanas, which I could understand is very, very disappointing. And, you know, this is something that obviously people have to make a decision for themselves. It's a very hard thing for people to make a long-term decision because of something which perhaps in hindsight people look back and don't see as an event that was that the trimmings are typhus mukim as much as they do before the fact. As I said, it's emotionally very difficult for people, but I think that people should be encouraged. You can't force people to do things. You have to be sensitive to people's needs. It's very, very difficult. You have to find creative ways to try to bring simcha into their lives at whichever stage it is. But I would agree with Reb Shraga that people should be encouraged to find ways to continue within the guidelines of whatever is considered healthy. And I think that we can't wait until things get back to the way they were.
Somebody called me just this evening before I came over to Yeshiva and say, since it's a fifth date, can they go in the car together? I said, that's not a keveya. If there's a danger, if the doctors hold that they shouldn't be in a car together, you can't say the fifth date is a matir. It's not. At the same time, people who are already engaged, even though many times Rabbeim and Rabbonim, I believe, correctly encourage people to have short engagements because long engagements are difficult. At the same time, if someone could right now make a wedding before the 3 weeks or after the 3 weeks, I pose to them the question and saying, if you could wait the extra 3 weeks and you have a bigger olam at your chasna and it would make a difference to you, could you wait? The answer is yes. And if they say not having a bigger olam doesn't make a difference and they're more interested in getting married, it could be that for some people that would work too, even though they may have a smaller backyard chasna, that could work for them too. But it has to be examined accordingly. And I believe, like, when there are shidduchim that can come from two cities that are very far apart and where traveling is still difficult, then I'm not saying a person is required to go out with somebody in their own town just because that makes it easier, but to get involved in a shidduch, if there's no mahalach of how they could meet, I don't believe that anybody can get engaged, I don't think, on Zoom and Skype. You have to be in person at some point in the relationship, you know, in our world for it to work. I think that's a davar pashut ad ma'id. And that if you can't make a relationship, you know, based on Skype and Zoom, right, it can start, but there has to be contact where they are in the same place. Can be 6 feet apart or 10 feet apart. That, just because they're not in the same car, doesn't stare me as much as if they're not together physically in the same location.
Okay, so the last set of questions, which I think is going to touch on some of what was discussed earlier, is as follows. How should a person relate to a rav, friend, or family member whom they feel is acting or speaking irresponsibly? The term Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem, the terms Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem are constantly used to describe other people's positions. Often what one person regards as a great mitzvah is viewed by the other as a great avera. Some specific examples are attending minyanim or opening schools when it contravenes the directives of the government, attributing the stop of the pandemic to the reopening of yeshivas as opposed to the social distancing measures, attributing deaths and hospitalizations to closing down shuls as opposed to not social distancing. So these are some of the types of questions. There were many more examples that brought to the fore many people's discomfort with positions that they find to be very abhorrent, or on the other hand, very laudable. And people are confused because very often someone that they had up until now had cordial relations with as a friend or a family member or someone that they had respect for is now taking a position which they feel is beyond the pale. How should a person relate to that?
Well, jumping to the last question, which I find highly objectionable, if Gedolei Torah and Choshev Rabbanim decided to close kehilas and for people to say that that's why people died, is mamish l'anias daiti a ridiculous thing to say. The Avada, it was a shreklecha thing that kehilas had to close down their minyanim. But if that's what Rav Deis of doctors and Rabbanim held to be done, that was done in Klal Yisrael, then there's no suffix that the people, the Davim, the Yechidus, had the Schus HaTzibur with them because they listened to the Rabbanim, because Hamir Tzakanti Misura. I assume that there were people that took objection to the fact that Yisrael Salanter decided to make Kiddush Yom Kippur when it was the cholera epidemic and saying, Estaf Yom Kippur, that's because he felt that people should have strength so they shouldn't get cholera. Of dem hutman agoru hadar v'zok, and if gedolim say, then no one should think that where people are dying because they closed down shul. That is mamish shtus l'kuli alma, and I don't think there's any toot studim about that. See,
I definitely agree that for people to take a position that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish people for listening to their Rabbanim, I think goes keneged the seichel and keneged our understanding of how the Rabbanim Shel Olam wants us to function. A Yid who listens to the Rabbanim Shel Olam, the outcome may be what the Rabbanim Shel Olam wants, but it's not going to be punished because he listened to the Rav. The Rabbanim are trying to be Erlich in every kehila. They make their judgments and they tell their people what they feel is right. The people who are following their Rabbanim, they're not going to be punished because they followed the Rav. The Rabbanim Shalom doesn't punish for that. That's not called a pshia. Whatever is supposed to happen to a person, even though b'shas there's a din, b'shas there's a sakana, then of course the hanhaga changes. We're all in the matzav of midas adin. We're all in a matzav of a sakana. But if there's no pshia, that does not add to the Siba of any of the terrible things that we experienced. I think that it's an Nisoyan for people to understand there's something called Toh B'Dvar Mishnah and Toh B'Shikul Hadas. I can have an opinion that my Bar Plukta is a Toya B'Shikul Hadas. I can say my judgment is different than his. I hold this as Mutter on Shabbos, he holds it's Usser. He holds it's Usser, I hold it's Mutter, he calls me a cow, and I call him a Michal Shabbos. That's how we deal with each other. I don't agree with him, but he's entitled to his opinion because he's a Talmud Chacham. He doesn't call me a cow because he holds I'm entitled to my opinion. If people who are giving Hadracha are qualified people, this is their Shikul Hadas. You're not Meshubid to accept everyone's Shikul Hadas. You can be Chaylik, Gezunter Ahet. But to label people and to be then follow through and say, this is the Siba for that, I think that's reserved for people who are beyond the scope of probably most people who are asking the Shailas.
So I think that perhaps I didn't properly convey the questions the way they were being asked, because the thrust of the questions were not built upon a lack of respect, and the way the question is being answered is that we should not have a lack of respect for people who are coming to make honest attempts to answer questions, and that it's unfathomable that an oinish should come about because of a person listening to the roiv. Roifim or Roif Rabbanim, etc. The question, the way it was being asked, was that if a person says people started dying in New York when the shuls got closed down. That's when a main Yehei Shmei Rabbah was stopped. Therefore, I can conclude that the lack of a main Yehei Shmei Rabbah caused the deaths. The reason why somebody the reason why someone is offended by that type of statement is because you don't need to be any level of Talmud Chacham or any level above a simple Bar Das to understand that the world that we live in has certain teva in it, and that the virus is what killed people, and the fact that it happened after the shuls were closed is simply the lag time to which the virus took to kill the people. And I'm just giving that as an example, but what I'm using it for is to try to convey that that is really the thrust of the questions, where statements are being made which plainly contradict the most elementary understanding of the way physical world works, the most elementary logical flaws that anybody can pick up on without having any kind of special chachma. And it's at that point that the people are feeling this conflict, where someone is saying something which is so absurd in their eyes that they view it as offensive, and the bigger the person, the more of a conflict it creates.
If I could respond, I'm not asking to know who were defending, but let me just explain it my understanding. If someone makes a statement that when Klal Yisrael doesn't have the schus of people davening betzibur, of the learning that goes on in the Moisdes HaTorah, that Klal Yisrael becomes more vulnerable, that is a true statement. That's not necessarily a criticism of behavior. That's a chelik of the gzeira that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away the ability to have that shmira. If someone makes a statement, and again, it very often is a subjective statement and taken out of context, it sounds differently. If someone would make a statement, they're being asked a question, there are tzdadim lekanu lekan, what to do. And someone makes a statement that there's a certain level of sakana, is it the right thing to close the schools, not to close the schools? And someone makes a statement that he feels that there's a shmira which comes with the schuyos that come with it. That's a chelik of his shikul hadas as to whether or not it goes into the geder of whether you want to label it shchiya hazeka, bari hazeka, as to where you can't make those cheshbainis, or it's not within that realm to make those cheshbainis. That's very, very subjective. So it's a true statement that not having the schuyais creates a certain vulnerability. I think Rav Shraga mentioned before, Klal Yisrael listening to its Rabbanim is in itself a schus harabim, but we never know how to measure schuyais. So within a certain context, there's truth to the statement. I think very often the statements are taken out of context, and then they begin to sound either ridiculous. They can sometimes sound like these people are not in touch. You know, again, it's very much dependent on how the question was asked, how the answer was said. But again, there's truth to the statement, but when taken out of its context, it could sound unreasonable.
I would just like to add that instead of spending time talking about people looking for the negative in statements that are either incorrect or misunderstood, as Rabsi pointed out, we should focus instead on all the gvaldigas things that have come out, the amount of chesed that people have done, the creative ways that they help people who were alone and the gifts they were given and different ifanim and the medical people and the nurses and doctors and Hatzalah people that did and are doing and hopefully won't have as much to do, so much Mesiras Nefesh and so much Avaida Toiva. We should focus talking more about these Gvaldike Dvarim Toivim that came out, Chasodim that were mamish, so original and so beautiful, and the stories of people that were Meisr Nefesh to have beautiful Sdarim themselves for hours, and how people, neighbors got nearby to other people and sang for people that were alone, gifts that were given to people that were alone, older people, and all the Schwerkeiten that these people went through and the way they took it and did it, to talk about the positivity of all the good that came out from this Shrek Lechatzara is much more important than dealing with these Narishkeiten about statements being taken out of context, etc. And that's what we should be focusing on talking about as much more important.
I could just add one more little piece. There's a challenge which I think is even greater bismanenu, and that is the challenge of the mitzvah of Betzedek Tishpat Amisecha to be done everyone lekafschus, and certainly somebody who's a Talmud Chacham. Very, very often bismanenu, more often than in the past, we hear things that someone said or did. The muskel rishon of a person. I don't have to necessarily feel that what I'm hearing is a mitzvah, what I'm hearing is a tzidkus. I can hear things that don't make sense to me. But my muskel rishon is, if the person is a Talmud Chacham, l'kol hapach is dan l'kaf schus, that maybe I'm not hearing right, maybe they didn't get it right, maybe it was out of context. I don't have to know all the details, but my muskel rishon should not be one of bittul and criticism, certainly where it's talmid chachamim, but even anoshim ksherim, even a person that's muchzik bekashrus, a simple person who's muchzik bekashrus. Chazal tell us, you down the person lekaf schus. When you have something, the Rebbeinu Yonah writes, where it's kemat muchrach, he's doing something wrong, so then you have halachas. But when you hear things which are second, third, fourth hand, and you know that you're getting fragments of whatever it may be, for a person's muskel rishon to be cynical and to be critical, it's keneged what Chazal tell us. I think it's really it's a terrible thing for one's own midas. What would I feel if they were talking about me? Imagine if somebody quoted, and anybody can apply it to themselves, anybody quoted something that you said, a fragment of what you said, you would say to yourself, have the decency to at least not jump to any conclusions. You want to give me a call? Give me a call and ask me if it's true. And if I tell you it's true and you're critical, so tell me your criticism. I think every person would ask, push it as a, being a decent person, don't judge me in the worst oifen as your muskel rishon.
And I believe to add to these beautiful words that if we could talk and be more positive and betzedek tishpat amisecha, that could be a schus otzim for this sorrow to go away. And we should look at it that way, that it's pashut, and it's not only a machayev for us individually as people, as Rabbi pointed out, but it's a schus that if we can be positive and not talk about that this kehila is behind and this one's ahead and this one's doing that, to understand that everybody's trying their best and Erlich HaTayri Yidden, they're trying to do things, they're doing the best they can do, and to see the positive, to see the toiv in this, instead of the machlokes that could be, the satan vil machlokes, when the Eberskim vil shalom, and we know that we're a couple of days before Matan Taira, and when Klal Yisrael is Kim Shara Kadosh Baruch Hu Sheyisrael son with a machlokes, v'av with a shalom, v'osuch haniyachas, we have to have in this time a sinus machlekes and ava shalom, and try to find an achdus even when there are deis chokim, in order that we should be zeichah to an emes de kabbalas hatera.
I think that was a appropriate way, at least for Neuberger, to end. If Berkowitz has any closing 1 minute chizuk to offer, and then we could bring this to conclusion. Just before that, I'd like to again thank everybody for contributing questions. And I'm sorry that we were not able to cover everyone's questions, but I hope that we were able to cover some of the more general ones and more often asked ones. And I hope that it was informative.
I would just close by saying that I feel it's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem that so many people are Mevakshe Hashem, people who called in, sent in questions. They're looking for answers. They're looking for Hadracha. The biggest chus for Klal Yisrael is that when a tzibur, especially in such a matzah, but all that always looks for Hadracha, looks for the Dvar Hashem, that is the biggest chus that we can have. And in that chus, we should all remain healthy. We should be zeicha that Klal Yisrael should be nesrapa, because Baruch Hu should send the Yeshua b'karayif and a good nyantif.